Jesus is Lord of all. What does that mean to us? We're going to be looking at Matthew chapter 8 this morning. So if you want to turn your Bibles to that chapter, you may have noticed that we didn't have a Bible reading this morning yet. And that's because I wanted Matthew 8 to be our Bible reading, but I wanted to be able to, you know, read each section as we came to it. So I thought instead of reading it twice and taking the time that that requires, that I would just ask Sam if he was willing to read each portion as I come to it. So before we get started with the first section, overall, Matthew chapter 8 comes right after the Sermon on the Mount, which is Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7. And in Matthew chapter 8, he's just coming down from the mountain, according to the first verse, and a number of things happen. And as I looked at this chapter, I realized that there are various ways in which Jesus shows his lordship over different things in each of these six anecdotes that are recorded for us by Matthew. And what I believe we will see from this is that Jesus being Lord of all is sufficient for us because he has the power over anything that could cause problems in our lives. But even more so, Jesus is sufficient for us because his power is sufficient not only here and now, but will carry us beyond the grave and will bring us into an eternal glory in his presence. Okay, so let's begin with our first portion of Matthew chapter 8, and that's the first four verses.
When Jesus came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said, "be clean." Immediately he was cleansed of his leprosy. Then Jesus said to him, "See that you don't tell anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer the gift Moses commanded as a testimony to them."
So we see here a leper that comes to Jesus. But do you know what happens when a leper is in a crowd of people? You know, a lot of people hate being in crowds, right? There's too many people around. A leper didn't have that problem. A leper could walk through a crowd of people, and they made way for him wherever he went. It was a thing of beauty, except for the leprosy part. What was less beautiful is that the people who were giving a wide berth were also throwing stones and calling him names and calling him unclean and telling him to get out of here. Because leprosy was such a dreaded and such a contagious disease. Jesus, on the other hand, listened to the man. Listened to the man who said, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." A man who understood the power of Jesus, a man who had faith in the power of Jesus. And Jesus says to him, "I am willing. Be clean." And then do you know what happened? Jesus reached out his hand and touched the leper. Do you know the last time that leper would have been touched? People are starved for physical affection if they are never touched. Just the value of a human hug means so much. And he hadn't been touched probably in years. Jesus took away the man's shame, the stigma that went along with his condition. And then he was cleansed. Jesus is Lord over our shame. Jesus is Lord over our stigma. What is there in your life that brings shame? What is there that people look at you and laugh at you? Maybe you're too short. Maybe you're too tall. Maybe you're too fat. Maybe you're too skinny. People will find a million different things to make fun of you for. The most common, the most likely, is being made fun of because of your faith. But Jesus is Lord over shame and stigma. And he calls us to be like him, to not see people the way others do, but to see people the way that Jesus does. And to be that person who will reach out to the one being shamed and draw them in. Jesus is Lord over shame and stigma. 5-13.
When Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him, asking for help. "Lord," he said, "my servant lies at home, paralyzed, suffering terribly." Jesus said to him, "Shall I come and heal him?" The centurion replied, "Lord, I do not deserve to have you come under my roof, but just say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes, and that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed and said to those following him, "Truly I tell you, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. I say to you that many will come from the east and the west and will take their places at the feast with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the subjects of the kingdom will be thrown outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Then Jesus said to the centurion, "Go, let it be done just as you believed it would." And his servant was healed at that moment.
Here we have a centurion, a Roman, the enemy. However, as much as the leper, their own countryman, was persona non grata, this guy is almost a hero. Luke tells us in his account that when the Jews came to Jesus, they pleaded with him earnestly, saying, "He is worthy to have you do this for him, for he loves our nation, and he is the one who built our synagogue." That passage always makes me smile. I'm sure that Jesus was so glad to have help in determining who was worthy and who wasn't. But anyway, this Roman centurion obviously was, by human standards, a good man. And if he had the affection of the Jewish people, he had to be an amazing man, because, like I say, he was the enemy. How often do we try to convince God or something, or ourselves, that something in particular we're praying for needs to happen? Talking about the Jews trying to force Jesus' hand in this matter. Jesus offers to go to the man's home and heal the servant. But this centurion's faith is so great, he says, "You know what? I'm not worthy to have you come under my roof. But you know what? I understand power. I'm a man in authority, and I've got slaves, and I've got servants, and I've got soldiers under me, and I say to this one, go, and he goes, and this one, come, and he comes. Whatever I say happens, and I know that that's the same with you. Your words are as powerful as my commands. And all you've got to do is say, you don't have to come to my house. I know that's not necessary. Just say the word, because you're not limited by time and space. You're not limited by geography. You don't have to come to my house in order to say the word. So why don't you just do it right here and save yourself the bother and save me the embarrassment, because I'm not worthy for you to come under my roof. Well, if there was anything that could blow Jesus away, it would be this man who was not part of the Jewish nation, who could show that degree of faith. A man who could understand that the physical presence of Jesus was not necessary for healing. A man who knew that all he had to do was say the word. A man who understood the worthiness or unworthiness of having Jesus enter his abode. Just say the word, and my servant will be healed. Jesus listens to the man, applauds his faith, and then he says, "Go, let it be done for you as you have believed." Think about those words for a minute. Let it be done to you as you have believed. Those are challenging words for you and me. Let it be done as you have believed. What does our belief, what does our faith today enable? And what does it limit by not believing that it can be done? Go, let it be done for you as you have believed. God is not limited. Jesus is Lord over time and space.
When Jesus came into Peter's house, he saw Peter's mother-in-law lying in bed with a fever. He touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she got up and began to wait on him. When evening came, many who were demon-possessed were brought to him, and he drove out the spirits with a word and healed all the sick. This was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet Isaiah. He took up our infirmities and bore our diseases.
Here we see Jesus at the home of one of the 12, Simon Peter. And Peter's mother-in-law, Jesus notices, is in bed with a fever. And he heals her, and she gets up and waits on him. This is an immediate healing. This is a complete healing. This is someone who is probably older and who is not well at all. And the moment she is healed, she's well enough to serve him whatever he needs. News spreads that Jesus is at Simon Peter's house, and by evening, the neighborhood looks like a hospital ward. Everybody has been brought who is sick or demon-possessed, and Jesus heals them all. There's a hymn that I was wanting Will to lead this morning, but it's not in our books. At even when the sun was set, the sick, O Lord, around thee lay. Oh, with what diverse pains they met. Oh, with what joy they went away. Once more 'tis eventide, and we, oppressed with various ills, draw near. What if thy form we cannot see? We know and feel that thou art near. Lord Savior Christ, our woes dispel, for some are sick, and some are sad, and some have never loved thee well, and some have lost the love they had. And none, O Lord, have perfect rest, for none are wholly free from sin, and they who fain would serve thee best are conscious most of wrong within. Thy touch has still its ancient power. No word from thee can fruitless fall. Here in this solemn evening hour, and in thy mercy, heal us all. After seeing the healing of the leper and the healing of the centurion's servant, it's no wonder by this point that I finally get around to the fact that Jesus is Lord over disease. Jesus not only heals those, but he's now healed Peter's mother-in-law. He's healed the people that have been brought in Peter's neighborhood. Jesus is Lord over disease. When we find ourselves stricken with, you name it, we need to remember that Jesus is Lord over disease. And we'll talk more about the implications of that as we conclude. So. 18-22.
When Jesus saw the crowd around him, he gave orders to cross to the other side of the lake. Then a teacher of the law came to him and said, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." Jesus replied, "Foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." Another disciple said to him, "Lord, first let me go and bury my father." But Jesus told him, "Follow me and let the dead bury their own dead."
Naturally, Jesus, the miracle worker, develops quite a following. Crowds are following him, wanting to watch the next miracle and the next miracle. He's quite the charismatic character by the terms of the day. And so some people are getting to the point where they want to be known as Jesus followers and not just groupies. Okay, so one guy comes up to Jesus and he says, "I'll follow you wherever you go." And Jesus basically says, "Do you realize that that means that there will be times when you're not going to know where you're going to spend the night that night?" Someone else comes up to Jesus and says, "I'll follow you wherever you go, but first I've got to go do my father's funeral." And Jesus says, "You know what? Leave the dead to worry about their own dead." Following me means breaks in relationships, sometimes even in family relationships. Jesus says to the people who would follow him, there's a cost to be paid. You've got to think about what you're going to do. There are priorities, and you can't just follow me and have everything else from your life the way it was. You can only follow me if I am your priority, your number one priority. Everything else in your life has to pale by comparison to such a degree that even your love for your mother or your father is going to look like hate by comparison to how much you love me. Jesus must be Lord over our priorities.
Then he got into the boat, and his disciples followed him. Suddenly, a furious storm came up on the lake, so that the waves swept over the boat. But Jesus was sleeping. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Lord, save us! We're going to drown." He replied, "You of little faith, why are you so afraid?" Then he got up and rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm. The men were amazed and asked, "What kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him."
Few things are as frightening as a violent storm, and way more so if you're out in deep water in a boat and you think that boat's about to sink. If you're that far from shore, this could be the end of it for you. The lives of the 12 were in imminent danger, but Jesus appears to be unconcerned, despite the fact that the boat was being covered by waves. The disciples didn't understand that as long as the Lord, who made the heavens and earth, was with him in the boat, they had absolutely no cause for concern. So to ease their mind and help them understand his power, he calmly got up and rebuked the winds and the sea. And there was a great calm. The picture of that is just amazing. Jesus is Lord over the elements. And while it can be hard to understand sometimes why natural disasters of such horrific proportions happen, and again, we'll talk a bit more about that at the end, it's important to remember, first and foremost, that none of this is happening because something got a little too big for Jesus. That something happened, that some storm spun up that was a surprise to him. Not the case. He remains firmly in control of the forces of nature. Hebrews 1:3 says he upholds the universe by the word of his power. He didn't just create it, he keeps it spinning. Jesus is truly Lord over the elements. We sung this morning, Master, the Tempest is Raging. And it's one of my favorite hymns. I love the fact that it goes from talking about this story, the storm on the sea, and ties it into the storms in our lives as well. And in the same way that Jesus can calm that physical storm, Jesus can speak peace into the storms that are in our lives. Even the other one of the other hymns that we sang this morning, Love Lifted Me, ended up verse 3 saying, He's the master of the sea, billows his will obey. He your Savior wants to be saved today. May we truly be able to sing with the children. I don't know if you know the children's song. I've only heard it maybe 10 years ago for the first time at the Waterloo Church. With Jesus in the boat, I can smile in the storm when I'm sailing home. And it makes my heart happy when I hear the children singing that song, because to them it's just another song. But as that gets ingrained in them, and any of us who went to Sunday school as children know the songs that we sang get ingrained in us, don't they? They will carry within them throughout their lives that reminder that Jesus can calm the storms in their life while they're sailing home. Jesus is Lord over the elements.
When he arrived at the other side in the region of the Gadarenes, two demon-possessed men coming from the tombs met him. They were so violent that no one could pass that way. "What do you want with us, Son of God?" they shouted. "Have you come here to torture us before the appointed time?" Some distance from them, a large herd of pigs was feeding. The demons begged Jesus, "If you drive us out, send us into the herd of pigs." He said to them, "Go." So they came out and went into the pigs, and the whole herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and died in the water. Those tending the pigs ran off, went into the town, and reported all this, including what had happened to the demon-possessed man. Then the whole town went out to meet Jesus, and when they saw him, they pleaded with him to leave their region.
Probably the hardest thing for us to understand is the issue of demons or evil spirits. This is mainly because we ourselves, although we ourselves are spiritual beings, we are spiritual beings trapped in a physical body. This limits us in ways that we can't even imagine. One such limitation is being able to grasp the concept of the spirit world. But rest assured, the spirit world is very real, and demons are very real. Jesus never questioned their existence. But Jesus showed mastery over them. This is not the first, even in this chapter, casting out of demons. That scene at Peter's place where he healed his mother-in-law, the hospital ward scene out in the front yard afterwards, records not only that Jesus healed the people that were brought to him, but that he also drove out evil spirits. Here we have an account of many evil spirits creating such a problem of violence that people were afraid to even be in that area. However, far from any violence coming Jesus' way, the evil spirits cowered before him and begged him, if you're going to cast us out, at least let us go into that herd of pigs, which Jesus allowed, and the pigs, as we heard the story, go down the bank and into the lake and drown. Even the spirit world is no match for the one who is Lord over all spirits. Jesus is Lord over all. The question that comes to mind when we think about Jesus being Lord of all, especially about disease and natural disasters, is why? Why, if Jesus is Lord over disease, why doesn't he do more about it? If Jesus is Lord over natural disasters, why doesn't he act like it? To do justice to this question would require another whole sermon, which I'm not going to do at this moment. You're welcome. And we have actually talked about this in the past, but it's something that we can't talk about too much because it is a problem that's huge to us. Why doesn't Jesus heal my cancer? Why doesn't he heal my mother's arthritis? Why doesn't he heal my daughter's heart condition? These are hypothetical. It's not, yeah. We don't understand why he allows these things to go on. Why the horrific loss of life in tsunamis and hurricanes and floods and you name it. In a nutshell, I don't know. But what I do know is that I have a God who has purpose. In brief, I'll try to keep this brief. Let's talk for a minute about the Apostle Paul, who was in this position. Paul, the mighty missionary journey guy. Paul, the guy who established churches, who went back and strengthened churches. Paul, who was so zealous for God, all of a sudden found himself with, we don't know what it was, he just calls it his thorn in the flesh. And Paul says in 2 Corinthians, three times I asked God to take this away from me. And you know what God said? No. Actually, God's response was a little longer than that. God said, no, my grace is sufficient for you because power is perfected in weakness. Isn't that beautiful? As long as Paul was healthy and vital, he could go on and do great things for God. When Paul was stricken with a thorn in the flesh, he found himself relying on God to a degree that he never understood before. God says in Isaiah chapter 55, as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways. We don't understand why these things happen. Why the natural disasters that Jesus is Lord of? Why the disease that Jesus is Lord of that he could fix in a twinkling of an eye if he chose to? But he doesn't always choose to. And we need to have the humility as children of God to accept what he brings our way. Still praying for healing, praying for deliverance from that, because sometimes that is in his will. We've seen healings that were nothing short of miraculous, but we've seen so many times when they're not. I don't know if I've read this to you before or not, but I can't read it enough. It sums up so well what I believe in this matter, what I believe the scriptures teach us. I asked God for strength that I may achieve. I was made weak that I might learn to humbly obey. I asked for health that I might do greater things. I was given infirmity that I might do better things. I asked for riches that I might be happy. I was given poverty that I might be wise. I asked for power that I might have the praise of men. I was given weakness that I might feel the need of God. I asked for all things that I might enjoy life. I was given life that I might enjoy all things. I got nothing that I asked for, but everything that I hoped for. Almost despite myself, my unspoken prayers were answered. I am among all men most richly blessed. We don't understand the ways of God. In humility, we can only accept what God sends our way and believe that if he doesn't take away what seems to be such a horrible problem, that there is a greater good at work. All things work together to those who love God. We're not guaranteed to know what those things will be, but we are guaranteed that Lord Jesus is the Lord of all. And nothing that happens escapes his attention. God is awesome. He is powerful. He created all things. The entire universe surrounding this world in which we live, stretching out into infinity. So many things get thrown our way in life. Shame and stigma, disease. So many obstacles seem insurmountable. The elements, time and space. So many plans get dashed. So many things are confusing or scary, like the spirit world. So when we find ourselves looked down on or are viewed as outcasts by others, remember Jesus is Lord over shame and stigma. When we find ourselves challenged by frightful disease, Jesus is Lord over disease. When we find ourselves at the mercy of the storms of life, be they natural or otherwise, Jesus is Lord over the elements. When we feel like a microscopic speck in this big universe, we need to remember that Jesus is Lord over time and space. When our plans unravel, Jesus is Lord over our priorities. And when we encounter the negative forces of evil in whatever form that may take, Jesus is Lord even over the spirit world. Most of the people in Matthew 8 didn't know Jesus, or they were just becoming aware of him, even in the case of the 12. This was near the beginning of Jesus' ministry. It was important that they understood who and what he really was. But for all that each of these issues was huge to those who encountered them, in Jesus' eyes, they were microscopic, because Jesus had the blessing of perspective. And thanks to the scriptures, we also have the ability to have that perspective. Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. Do you have terminal cancer? It's light and momentary. Do you have arthritis that's going to go on till you die? It's light and momentary by comparison with what lies beyond. It's a beautiful thought. And it's not said to minimize what we are dealing with as human beings. It's tough, it's hard, it's painful. And what we're saying is not meant to minimize that as all, but to grant us perspective to understand that in the realm that supersedes time and space, it is a microscopic blip. Maybe like the people who wanted to follow Jesus, we need that wake-up call from Jesus that says, your well-being might take a back seat. Your relationships might take a beating. But you know what? The creator of the universe loves you without measure. He will never refuse, and he's proven this, he will never refuse anything that you need for life and godliness. Paul said in Romans 8, if God didn't spare his own son but gave him up for all of us, won't he graciously along with him give us all things? That is why we need Jesus so desperately. That is why Jesus is Lord of our lives, not just because he's Lord of shame, stigma, disease, the elements, time and space, priorities and spirit world, but because through him we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins, Ephesians 1:7. When we can truly wrap our minds around what reality truly is, eternity, and understand that even here and now, Jesus is Lord of all, we will be at peace with anything and everything that would otherwise knock the wind out of our sails, because we know that the one who is Lord of all is in ultimate control. Nothing will happen that he did not permit, and all of his promises are ours for the taking. Because Jesus is Lord of all, we can cast all of our cares on him, because he cares for you. 1 Peter 5:7. Jesus is sufficient because because he is Lord of all. Because he has power over anything that could cause problems in our lives. But even more so, he is Lord of all and sufficient for us because his power continues beyond the grave and will bring us into an eternal glory in his presence. Our final hymn this morning is hymn number 358, coincidentally titled, Jesus is Lord of All. 358. Let's stand, please, as we sing.